Chris Gans.
Present.
Kathleen Erickson has left. John Burr.
Present.
Robin Schombach, absent. Bill Viner.
Here.
Rick Gonzalez is absent. Fred Ronstadt.
Here.
Michael Becker.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Let's continue then.
Great, thank you. One image that we didn't have up and now is the landscape plan, or the hardscape plan, if you will, that, and I'll just pass this around so you can look at it a little bit as we're chatting. And it really is, as we've, so this is a an outcome of our conversations with planning staff. And as we work through maintaining the integrity of the PAD, but also satisfying the program, what we had to do, this whole idea about 8-foot sidewalks and 12-foot sidewalks and all that, this was designed to reflect that. So essentially what we've done here, you can see how we've maintained the 12-foot sidewalk. Here's the 24-foot easement for vehicles. You can see how these vehicles are backing into this circulation path. And so creating a buffer here was really important, both with trees, and they're just ghosted back, but they're a tree canopy all along this corridor. And then what we've done is introduced a series of two by two grid, if you will, and then an occasional element that will allow water to migrate across the site and into the planters. This is our public parking access. And then, as I mentioned in the presentation, how we've eased that corner while the easement runs here, we've just to give this a little bit more of a sense of place so that we can, now I messed up. Here we go, thank you, sorry about that. And then really maintaining that big idea, while this 15 foot is in here, then I gotta move back, right. All right, so planters along the jewel wall, and then our 8-foot path of travel, and then this landscape buffer, and then now our residential entrance. And then as we move up the site, we've stepped the building back, because it would be weird that the building was kind of an angle to follow that, and this really helped our massing and scale. And so we stepped the building back, and then here's where our bike parking is. And you can see the bike stations, and at the same time we've maintained this minimum 8-foot corridor, but it's wider in many places. So we've got a great zone here that's saying, look, I'm not in your front door, but I'm visiting you. This was the best place to put our public bike parking for short term. Now the long term is inside in the retail parking for the cars, but our short term bike parking was substantial amount of bikes at this location. And then you can see just here in real light is the switch gear and the transformers that are gonna be maintained. So there's an easement here that's not really reflected graphically, but it was required to get all that equipment to live there. And then additionally, bringing landscaping along the street, pulling the building back slightly off the property line to maintain the sidewalk that's really essentially there. I walked it this morning again, and there was a decent plant here, and I was like, the plant is only this wide, and then I remembered, well, we added some space, and now we have this decent planter that really can take this edge and make it soft at the base of this jewel wall, and then still have the planters. Here's where the rideshare pickup is, that's graphically represented. And then there's a couple extra parallel parking metered spaces there as well. Here's where I just spoke about that. And let me just pass this around, because we've been thinking about this, how to solve for this. It's just a quick graphic, and I'll talk about it here. Is we are working to, as you can imagine, with subterranean parking, you've got ventilation intake and exhaust, and we're going to use this location for that. And what we realized is that we just had too tight of a pedestrian experience here. So what we're doing is we're taking and chamfering the building. So I didn't want to lose this big idea of the jewel wrap, and I wanted it to end here, not here. And so we're going to chamfer this, and by doing that, we can actually walk under the building and then come through. And so we think that's going to be a better pedestrian and safer pedestrian experience. And you can see how the sidewalk meanders around, and then we've got a little bit of encroachment here we're working on, same kind of idea. And then we're back to where we've got enough width, because it's really unique how Stevens goes from 16 feet to 10 foot and change. And then as it gets to this radius, they wind it again. And that's part of what we're working through. And then lastly, you can see the service area that we have. And our trash, our chutes coming down, our staging for our three-yard dumpsters, and then the pickup. So what's really kind of interesting, this, you think this triangle was challenging, but it's actually works fairly well because of the one-way system that the front-loaded trash truck can come in, they can queue up, pick things up, and then actually load. And then in a move-in situation where you want to back out of the back of a truck, we can actually have the truck come up and back in and then unload. So this little space, along with our transformers for our project, becomes a very effective way to service the entire project. And it's really not on any of the primary pedestrian paths. Okay, so that's that guy. All right, I'm really excited about hear what you have to think.
Can I open it up?
Please. Any
members?
Actually, they just posted the preliminary comments from Richard, but I haven't heard of finding any sort of update on the design professional comments today.
Yeah, there's nothing added on to this. I mean, this is the last time we saw it. Our intent is to look at it again after this review and then provide another document.
Okay. So the comments we received from your shop are not the comments?
Not based on what we see here.
Everything we've seen here has been since May 23rd.
Then I think maybe most of it still applies.
Great. I mean, I want to make sure that we can jump on this right away after today, pick up your comments, refine the design, and then come back and see you in a couple weeks. Right. So I don't want that to lag too much if possible. Right. So I want you to know that this is essentially, with the exception of that landscape plan I showed you, it is the May 23rd submittal package.
Sure. I just ask, Faith, was there anything in the presentation that stuck out as being?
One thing that we had talked about before was that Stevens. And to make sure, because that's sort of the back of house, and it's a street that maybe not a lot of people are using, but it could be a security issue for pedestrians that use that for some reason. So one of the thoughts that we had was to make sure that we have some windows or make sure that we have some ways for eyeballs to look onto that street. Mm-hmm. And we had talked about creating some artwork back there to attract people back to that area.
And that came up in our conversations with Historic as well. Is there any way that we could have something that talked a little bit about the history of the area so that it becomes a, and when you think about, ultimately as 4th Avenue evolves and there becomes a walking tour, right? I mean, that could happen over time, that maybe this is part of that.
Yeah, I think so. I think we talked about maybe the possibility of either doing something with Tucson High School, which has just a great resource in artwork.
And I'd rather see that on Stevens than on 8th. We did talk about it on 8th, but I'd rather that really, let's use that part of the building. And fortunately, Stevens is one way. I think that's going to help with what we're doing to adjust the sidewalks. It's going to help make it a safer experience.
Right.
Now, we're walking the same direction as travel, which is not ideal, but people that are coming from the north would obviously oppose traffic. We can't restrict which direction people come from.
It's not a very busy street right now, but we can tell what's happening in the future. So this is just to help.
I paid a lot of attention to that this morning, and I kept looking over my shoulder because I headed north or northwest, and I just, because the cars come whipping around the corner, and one did, and I just want to make sure that it was as you described. And I think with us pulling the building back off the property line and enhancing that, because right now it's right on the property line, it's quite tight.
Yeah, nice. Another item was where the stair tower is, the main stair tower. Is the image that you have there, the design, is that relevant to either 4th Avenue or the history or?
Are you speaking of the one that's at the entrance here?
Yes, right.
It's trying to be a void, if you will, a slot that breaks down the building scale. It's really not paying any homage to any particular part of 4th Avenue. But based on what Robin said this morning, I want to look at that a little more carefully and say, well, how do we make it feel like it's just not a blank wall, but also not create light pollution, right? And that was our original idea, is let's just make this thing glow and be really cool, and it sounds like that might not be the best answer.
Is that an open stair with just a mesh? Is that
how it's We've come back and forth on whether it's inside. I think it's going to be an enclosed stair, just for climate control. I mean, it's just facing east.
And so whatever that pattern is on glass, or it's some kind of frit or screen?
Exactly, one of those things. Right, and we did talk about Fritz, and we're working on, right, because if you put anything in front of glass, then how do you clean the glass, right? And so maybe the glass itself is doing the work for us, or maybe it's not glass at all, but it has voids in it that let light pass through. Some work to do there still.
Yes, another, I don't think we talked about this, but it's just from the last presentation, is there a possibility of working with the neighbors? I know you have your trash area and the service area back there, but like the little historic building that's to the south, is there a way to help pick up some of their trash as well?
They've got quite a bit of site there. I don't know why they wouldn't have the ability to do the same thing. There is a back of house, if you look at the site plan and where they live. That building sits just like this. They have the same triangle we have, but the fact that it's living in a zone, I think, is okay. I'd rather not try to coordinate that, because we don't know enough about what's happening here today. I feel like there's room there on that site to do for them to handle their own services, but use Stevens as the service drive.
Right. And then one final thing for me is, what happens with the drainage in this on this site?
Things.
Evaporates.
We're working with Grenier Engineering, and we spent a lot of time on that, and so we studied a number of solutions, and essentially what we're going to be doing here is we're going to be collecting some of that water in cisterns in various locations in our garage and redeploying it as water for our landscaping. But then the other water will actually go into, there's a massive storm drain right here that takes all this water today. I mean, this is 100% impervious right now. And so we're not making it any worse. In some ways, we're making it better. And so quite a bit of water goes here, and then water heads this way and this way. But we are capturing it and using and redeploying it in for what the amount we can, a couple thousand gallons of water we're capturing. And if I could just take it a little bit further, because we have been working on this, there'll be some that comes here that takes out of this roof. There'll be some here that takes out of these roofs. And so we're able to use it in different parts of the project. That was something we worked out with Public Works, and they were excited about that as a solution.
What's the capacity of the cisterns? A couple thousand?
We're around 2,000 in four locations. So 500 each. So, 550-gallon tank is pretty big, and so we've got four of those. Just because then we can deploy them in different, they're easier, it's the size of a Volkswagen, right, essentially. My family used to deliver fuel oil. I know exactly how much a 550-gallon tank is. So it'll fit very nicely in different parts, rather than doing a large, 2,000 or 2,500-gallon tank, and then trying to get it different places.
Any questions for me? Comments, ideas.
This is a complex project, obviously.
Cheers to that.
And to be fair, I've been working with Tom since fall of 2017 on the pad. Big issues for the neighborhood at the time: keeping Stevens a bike pad primary route that's safe. Streetscape activity all the way around the building, an emphasis on 4th Avenue, but not, and making sure none of the traffic got dumped out onto 4th Avenue and only had to go out onto 8th Street so that it was at a signalized intersection to cross into Iron Horse, Points North, and everything else instead of mid-block on a trolley line. And now, with the minor amendments that have happened, Stevens has become basically a parking access route. And most people are going to be going in and out and doing right and left turns mid-block onto 4th Avenue, creating unforeseen traffic.
I don't think they can go that way. They can only make a right because of the rail stop.
That's not what your circulation plan shows. that was approved as part of the minor amendment. It shows both directions.
That's fair. The Exhibit 10 suggested that we could turn, but...
So perhaps some signage would be part of the discussion when you present?
100% agree with what you just said, is we want to try to filter as much through here as possible so that you can get to a controlled intersection, and we can make this right out only. I think you're right. We were interpreting what the previous Exhibit 10 had, but and maybe that's a miss on my part, is to not say that Tom's scurrying through the path.
Fourth Avenue closes multiple times a year. Mm-hmm. There's going to be no access. You've got 200. We weren't terribly concerned about 32 parking spaces for retail because those are certain hours. No big deal if it was closed off. But now you've got
227.
Or 200.
Well, that's why we like this outlet, you know.
But I tried to count.
Yeah.
I noticed that Elsa counted as well.
Yeah.
I understand why it went down to 0.7. We thought it might, the one-to-one might be a little bit too much at the time. But this was conceived as kind of high-end market rate for, like, seniors living down here. And now that I'm looking at the floor plans, I actually count 392 apartments at 0.7, which would have a higher parking rate. And there's 66 four-bed apartments where you can't swing a cat in the living room. And it seems now that this is really going to be marketed to universities, area students, rather than the public.
I hope that's not the perception, because that's not what we're doing. We're not trying to do, while there is a student component.
I understand that they are market rate. They're rented by the unit. They meet the code. I'm not going to challenge it. It's just, it's different than the feelings I think a lot of us felt moving initially through the pad at this particular site.
Well, so to join in on that, I think, I don't know how many 3 and 4 bedrooms you have, but they are all, each bedroom has a bath, which is typical of the student housing that we've seen.
Sure.
And so that's where I would share a concern that John has as well, and what those numbers are, what the bed count is as opposed to the unit count in relationship to parking.
But I'm counting 736 bedrooms. So your IPP, which is tentatively approved that you put in with SOMAS in February, shows different apartment numbers. I think it was 324 and 740 beds at the time. Mm-hmm. But the May, June floor plans and everything else that have been amended since that substantially change it. You rework some stuff. You put in a few more studios, more fourplexes, the other stuff. There's very small public amenities. There weren't supposed to be any balconies below the floor, fourth floor, and I realize you've accommodated that for the individual units, but your public amenity for 700 and some tenants is basically a second-story balcony right on 4th Avenue. There's a 10 p.m. closure that's required. There's behavior management stuff required. I'm not sure how they quite what's going to happen with all of that if you've got 200 people playing in a pool every day up against a 110-foot wall blaring sounds back through the neighborhood. So I don't know that that is necessarily within the spirit. I understand why you did it programmatically. I understand why the minor amendments were cleared that were cleared. But I find it a little strange that the parking on Stevens now enters to the narrowest point where it's 10.8 feet. You've started to look at pinch points. That was going to be one of my real concerns. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of them is 42.5 inches, and the other one is 32.5.
Call for 6 feet. We're going to get the 6 feet.
Two vine corners. Mm-hmm. And there's a rolled soft curve. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I was on Downtown Links for 14 years. There's no place to put sidewalks on the other side. A new multiple-use path is supposed to connect over on the other side of the tracks in that particular area. But it is a designated by pedestrian route, and that's why we were trying to keep the Stevens facade as it was. We realized that it's not salvageable. You're honoring it, so on and so forth. But I don't see any perimeter lighting plan being presented, and so that's a whole dark element.
Okay.
I'm not sure about what's going on with the right-of-way with your electrical easement, because it looks like you're bumping out into the street on pages C1 through C7 in that particular corner. So I can't tell if there's an outside enclosure around those devices.
No,
or if it connects. I don't see how the sidewalks connect to the south. I see it really narrow.
And that's interesting, because there's no sidewalk going this way.
Yeah, but they're supposed to when they actually do a development package on it.
And so we would talk about that. So right now, and you've covered a number of points. Thank you. I want to try to. I'll keep listening.
The other thing that I find a little bit troubling is it's about just shy of 1,100 square feet all the way around, and we get 157 square feet of pretty retail. We get 3 parking entrances, and we get 36 feet of an identified, signalized entrance to the building. But the rest of it is essentially, it may be patterned, it may have light gels and other things in it, but it's a blank wall that varies between 17 feet tall and 22 to 33 feet high all the way around. So the pedestrian experience is literally blank for a quarter of a mile. And I don't see how that relates to the entire area. It's really good on 4th Avenue. It's really good on the approaches. But the 8th Avenue experience, the Western experience, the Stevens experience, since you now have to totally adopt that, is basically, this is a giant wall. Pedestrians not welcome. Get in a car.
Why don't you let Dean respond to these things so we can keep track of what's going on?
Yeah, I just have concerns.
No, thank you. All right, so let's talk about, let's start with Steve, and so we'll work backwards here a little bit. So the existing building lives on the property line. We've moved the building back more than 2 feet to help with that pedestrian experience, to maintain the PAD required 6-foot pedestrian path. And in some ways, the existing Stevens articulation gives us more room and more meandering of the sidewalk. Granted, this historic reference here, we could open that up, and back to Faye's comment, a little bit more eyes on the street, we could work on that a little bit. But having the ability to have to disperse the traffic a little bit, because you started with that, is, I think this is a benefit to the project, to have people not have to all push through this zone. There's already a lot of traffic from O'Malley's, and we really can't do anything about that, right? We've given a 36-foot easement for pedestrians and vehicles to circulate through the site. So if we can take up to, let's say, half of our cars and move them out of the site, then that's a good thing. So, but we also have to service the building, so not the entire building can be, for lack of a better term, a pedestrian experience, right? We have back of house, right? So that's transformers and generators and electric rooms, and these things have to live somewhere. We thought this was the best place to do it rather than trying to put it out here. Well, granted, we have parking that we're trying to screen. I'll grant you, this is a parking garage that we're screening, right? Not faking it, but we have to have that. This is to take and line this building with activated uses. First of all, we don't want to erode the merchant experience on 4th. So we want to push all the people to live here, right? That's the energy that we're creating. What we're saying here is we're creating a linear park's not the right word, but creating a pedestrian path of travel along the edge of our project that's a combination of landscaping and what we hope is a building that expresses art. And just saying, yeah, we've got to put our cars somewhere, right? This is a truly complicated site, and it's difficult to get all these program elements without doing a 5-story garage that has 20 cars on every floor. So we're working hard to figure out how to do this. Now, Faye, we talked about this earlier, you know, this idea that how do we take and make this more art and more eyes on the street. I think what we're going to try to do is to get that happening more in this zone along Stevens, so that this becomes a better path of travel. We're improving an unsafe condition here and eroding this corner to get people to, because that's the dangerous part, right, is coming around the corner. If there's a car coming this way, you want to make sure you're not walking out into the driveway. So I'll grant you, we are not activated. We are a wall that's screening parking. Hopefully we're doing it in a sensitive way. But we have to do it somewhere. And to say that this is a token activated streetscape, I would debate that a little bit, John, and say, this is where the energy wants to be. We really don't want people coming back into the property, because we have mixed uses. This is the shared space for the public. This is the residence entrance and zone. and this is the public's bike parking, right? And then those are, we had to make decisions on where program elements lived at the street level. Now, can we do a little bit better job here? We'll work on that. As far as, I don't think we're over the 0.7 on our units, back to your other point. If we made a mistake there, we'll make sure that we've got the right amount of units to meet the 0.7. I think the bed count's at around in the mid-sevens that you talked about, but I think that unit is, something's going on with that unit count. It doesn't sound familiar to me.
Is the way I counted the studios, the one bed, yeah, two threes and fours per floor, and then multiplied it by the number of floors to have it, and there's...
Okay.
All right. Three here. There's
I've got a full
here.
Metrics. I'll go double check the metrics because we had a floor by floor, unit by unit.
I know you wouldn't build a parking garage that wouldn't meet the needs that you anticipate, because it wouldn't be economic for you. So I'm not going to fight on that issue. It's just for people who don't live in this building, how is it going to be experienced in the area, and how the area in the future, north on 8th, how it connects to downtown Lynx, how it connects to 5th Avenue, how it connects over to 7th being activated with a whole bunch of pedestrian uses, how it links back down on 6th to the new Ronstadt Transit Center, and how the loop and all of these things kind of interrelate. And I don't want this to feel like a very large parking garage with a 4th Avenue presence that is basically an isolated, self-contained tower block that isn't necessarily a part of the community. And I see what you've done. There are a lot of elements I really like about the building. I like the pinch point thing. I've been chatting with Nick about that, so I'm sure you put that worm in your ear. I hope you do it in both places, because I see it.
I just met the man. I don't even know what you're talking about.
The column, and then moving angle points back and so on and so forth. I'm concerned about safe sidewalks all the way around and the other stuff. I know that when you presented to the Historic Commission, they recommended that you fill in the bottom panel all the way around, and I don't see any changes since that.
The bottom panel of?
Of the lower register on 4th Avenue. You've done it for retail,
sure.
1, 2, 3, 4, but there hasn't been any changes.
I brought that comment back. These are the materials from there, but yes, we talked about that, and we agree with that. We actually talked about that there are even storefronts where you can faux that bottom, we can do a system, but have it, and so that we had flexibility where we wanted to open the building to the street. So, no, it's a fair comment. Thank you for that.
I'm not trying to be evil. It's not. There's a lot of really good things about it.
Yeah. No, I appreciate the fair
comment.
But I
have some concerns, and I wanted to lay them out now so that you're not blindsided when we meet again in a few weeks.
Sure. No, good comments. Okay, thank you.
What are the number of beds in the 3 and 4 apartment units? Do you have a...
You mean number of units that we have? Well,
or number of beds in those or 3 and 4s.
I don't have the data with me, but we have a mix of single occupancy, studio, one bedrooms, we have 2 bedrooms, and we have 3s and 4s. We're not hiding the fact that a portion of this building will be used by students, but it also is not at Main Gate. It's not going to be a student project in exclusion. And we feel like it will be as important to downtown housing stock as it will be to the north. And so that's why we've created a mix of product types.
There are a couple reasons to ask. One is that we've had experience of students bringing cars, a lot of cars. And so that's an issue in terms of parking and in terms of how it actually affects the area around. As it gets more dense, it becomes more of an issue. But also, are you considering negotiating with state for all 3 transit passes so people can use the streetcar or buses so that...
We had a great conversation about that earlier today.
Yeah,
we're working on that.
That helps get people, one, not bringing cars up, two, is separating the charge from parking from the rental.
We have quite a bit of experience on this specific item, and we believe that if we build the right amount of parking, that the right amount of cars will come, especially in a TOD project where you have all these different modes of transportation. And so that's why we asked for the 0.7. Back to John's point, if we were at a 1-to-1, we'd have 340, 300 and something cars here. That's not helping anybody, right? So That said, we've also provided a community benefit of 32 public parking spaces for merchants that was in the PAD, but it also made a lot of sense. And so that's needed.
How do you restrict the public parking?
In terms of?
Is it going to be metered?
Everything else is metered in some way. We most likely be metered. It won't be free. But it also would be, you know, whether it's a booth in the corner where you put in your dollar and you get a sticker you put in your window, or whether each spot is metered, it's to be determined. Yeah, Tom?
Yeah, there was some conversation about Parkwise, because they have, you know, they monitor the parking on 4th, that bill about metering it. And then, you know, right now, where the parking lot used to be absolutely full at 7:30 to 8:30 in the morning because it was free parking for employees, downtown city employees and others, and now it's not used as much, but it's managed by Parkwise. So, you know, there was some talk about that also, them managing that.
But anybody that's visiting the area will, either they park on the street, parallel parking at a meter, they're paying a buck an hour or whatever it is. You know,
I think it should be monitored.
Right.
Yeah, that helps the merchants instead of people just parking it and leaving their car there for 5 hours.
Chris was talking about buying passes in bulk. Are you considering making that part of the rent, that everybody will get some type of parking pass to a transit or bus or access to a compact car or something, so that if you find yourself with the garages full and people still want to live there, how do you transport those people?
Sure. So we're still working on the logistics of the parking passes, the rideshare passes. We've talked about having, you know, zip car access, shared cars inside a garage.
So PAD.
Yeah, that's covering the PAD. So we'll have the ability for people to share cars in that that live here through that resource.
But you're not planning on giving, included in the rent, people a pass for any type of transit at all?
I don't think so. I mean, that's not our experience in the product types that we've built, but that's an interesting way to think about that. I feel like probably...
I think that making, would solve a lot of issues.
So as opposed to somebody paying for use, because that would be another way to make it affordable, but have a pay for use. But, right, because if it's free, then somebody's paying for it, right?
If you're discounting bulk rate, you could be offered to your tenants at that discounted price.
As I mentioned, we are talking about that. We've got some great feedback from the community about that, and we're working to solve for that. And we believe the city will want that as well, because we're trying to amp up ridership, right, on the light rail. So that's a way to help that.
I was just thinking, if that was publicized and people that knew they were going to rent here got a...
Oh, it's a great marketing
free
piece.
Parking facility, free parking pass for the transit or bus or whatever, mm-hmm. It would seem like it would be an incentive to live in this.
Sure, whether it's free or discounted, the idea is to incent people, which is going to help with our parking, our individual car parking requirement. So 100% agree.
Another question, 707 ISU, John, residents. Center or student housing projects that you guys built or designed to build, and I cannot detect the balconies on them. And as you know, Main Gate has been a major issue in terms of safety for students and balconies, people being harassed, people throwing things. And so what do you have any plan to address where students are living that the balconies are actually closed off? Because it will happen.
So our Tempe project has quite a bit of balconies. Actually, over 50% of the units have balconies, and some of them are for students. The way we've been handling this is that you behave, you get a balcony. You misbehave, it gets locked up. And that's as simple as that. And you continue to misbehave, you're out of the project. So if we treat people with respect, hopefully they're respectful. If they're not, then we deal with it. And that's how we've been handling our project. We have some that we've done no balconies, but we also have some that we have.
So who deals with issues that come out of, you know, maybe entries from balconies? Is it your company, or is it It's my drop zone. It hits my...
This is out of my pay grade. I'm going to turn to my left and ask Mr. Angelo to respond to that. Have we had any issues where people have misbehaved on balconies and someone's gotten injured?
Many of the properties I've been involved with, no. I know properties that have had issues, so I can't speak to the legality of what happens if something... But I would assume if something comes off of your building and injures somebody in the public, the property is liable for that. But to Dean's point, you know, from a management perspective, we do make sure all the balconies have a locking mechanism. And whether it's locked from day one and the balcony's just not functional, or it's you know, it's a privilege, and if you violate that privilege, you lose the use of the balcony. But it is a managed environment. And I will say, we view this product a lot differently than a purpose-built student house. This is not purpose-built student house, and I want to make that very clear. We recognize we are in the vicinity of a major university, and you are going to have students
sure.
wanting to live in a property this cool, right? And this is going to be a really neat project. And we also recognize that there's a lot more, a much broader demographic beyond the student, and the intent when we walk into this deal from day one, this is a market rate project. This is not a student housing project. You aren't going to turn our backs on students and if they want to lease the property, but we're not going to focus our marketing effort directly at the students. That being said, most of our conventional market rate projects that we've done across the country do have balconies. For professionals like all of us, having that indoor-outdoor living experience is much better. Now, if this was a pure student housing development, like you referenced 707, what we just finished in Champaign, Illinois, that's 100% students living in that property. There's no balconies. And because we don't want to, it's a management issue. I'm not going to sit there and police, you know, every balcony in the building.
But perceived or needed, balconies in a market rate project are important amenity to have. I mean, we have an example. You take a two-bedroom unit. We've got professors living in our projects in Tempe. They have a two-bedroom unit, and his wife's going to graduate school, but he's a professor. Or we have somebody that is 35 years old and just got out of the Army, and he wants to have a place, but he's going to school, right? He's an adult, right? And so there's a huge opportunity. You talk about seniors, the idea that, you know, seniors might be here. Absolutely. I mean, that could happen as well. And so it's an intergenerational market rate project.
One thing we're hoping is, and I think, John, you and I talked about it, there's an entrance past the barn that, if the links gets built, does mm-hmm. that you can get onto the links, and I'm involved on the board of the tech park, and the big employers out there are all complaining that they can't hire young professionals because they want to go to Denver, they want to go here because there's no place for them to live downtown, and they're making money. You know, they can, some of them can afford a condo, buy a condo too. It's not like they're not making money, and they don't want to live in an apartment out in Vail. They want to be in town. And when I leave Cushing Street, you know, our office, and go to the meetings out there, I can literally be walking out of my car without speeding in 19 or 20 minutes to go into the building for the meeting. And so, you know, once that links gets done, they come right out on Stevens, turn right, turn left on 8, and I'll be able to hit that, Chris, and go right in to the Lynx project and get out to the tech park, which now has about 6,900 employees. And the employees aren't getting older out there, they're getting younger as far as who they have to attract. So that's another thing that we talked about in the location relative to that entrance.
That's a market segment for us that we're looking forward to for the project.
It's like at least by the unit.
Yes. Yes, and I'm just this conversation about the issue. Dean's referenced a couple of times our project that just opened last year in Tempe. We approach this one almost the same way as far as the vision for the project and who's going to live at the project, you know, based on its location, all that. And we do have a very broad demographic of people living in our project in Tempe, like from professors to students. We have balconies on the majority of the units, and you know, Brett is a lot closer to that project than me, but I have not heard of any issues of misuse of the, you know, the top phase of that project.
It really isn't. It's an operational issue. It's a management issue, and you got to really police it carefully, and we do. And we specifically put in the lease that if there's a violation, then we're gone. And that's it has happened a couple of times. And as soon as that happens, right, when you manage that correctly, it sends a big message right from the very beginning that we're not, that's not going to be tolerated.
So we're a very sensitive to the issue. I'm well aware of the issues that have happened up in the main gate area when those high-rises first went up and still with the mosque and all that. So
I appreciate that. Yeah.
We heard some of those comments about people throwing things off the building, and that's probably through history in this particular market. We're not going to let that happen, and if something happens, we're going to deal with it. You could say that about any second-story space downtown that happens to be a restaurant or a club or an amenity space for another building. There's the playground right next to the AC that's got this outdoors. You walk by, somebody could, you know, so stuff happens. We just have to deal with it, and first of all, we don't want it to happen. Anyway, hopefully we've...
Another thing, I appreciate the work you're doing. Particularly on the ground floor, and you know, John's made some good remarks. I know that your closed bicycle parking be well lit and be safe for people to have their bikes there.
Right.
You are next door to a bar, and they have backup parking. And so I would encourage you. I don't know if you have anything in your landscaping on the north side of your building along Harbor there that would actually stop the vehicle before it gets to your building?
That's what we were talking about, this landscape buffer that we're using with trees, with trunks, and that right. will become bollards, essentially. Do we have to do more than that? We've got to look at that a little more carefully, because...
Right. We might need bollards.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. I don't think that we've fully addressed that, but... That certainly wouldn't be a bad idea. You're just being, here's the worst condition, right? Here we're perpendicular, we're okay. But these 10 or 12 spaces here could be a bit of a challenge. So I like the idea. I mean,
I think that's all for me. Anybody else, Fred?
I was going to say a lot of stuff was covered. On the outside design stuff you just talked about, the entryway into 4th Avenue. Mm-hmm. I think it's in the pad that you'll use a local artist to make it very clear that that is the entryway into 4th Avenue.
This space, we're talking about this zone here. I'm looking forward to that. I was really excited about in my personal tour and all the art that's around the community. We want to be part of that texture, that fabric. So
yeah,
I don't know what that means. How do we, is it an RFP? We go out and we have people do mock-ups. There was discussions about through the construction process of maybe doing some temporary graphics on our construction sign with a local artist. And so absolutely, we want to embrace the community. We're not coming in here and slam bam and we're out of here. I mean, this is important to us, just like every community that we work in.
Yeah, I don't remember who was talking about this, but the stairways, I like sort of how there's a sort of graphic design, at least in the renderings. But it seems like it's an opportunity to, instead of just being...
You're speaking of this slot right here? Or the other towers that I described?
The towers. It's an opportunity for art versus just trying to hide something. Using the light and all that kind of stuff. But I think there's a lot of talented artists in the community who might have... some really excellent ideas about how to integrate those sort of elements into the community.
So, to be honest and open with you about this, there's a 140-foot wall that's 20 foot wide. That's a large wall to create art. We have to figure out a way to do that cost effectively, but also enhance the project. And so that'll take a little bit of doing to do that. And we can't sit here today in design review committee and say, here's the art that's going to go on this wall. But what because that's going to take some time and it's going to evolve, I think, as the project evolves. And so we just have to all make a commitment that we're going to work with that network of creative people to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, we have a 30-foot tiki head.
I know. It's pretty
more
great.
More tiki elements.
I don't know. We don't want to detract from that special.
Yeah, I just think that, I mean, it's got to be respectful. But I think there's opportunities that, you know, once it's built and you, I like, you know, the idea of this gateway with the mural, the way you have depicted. I'm a big fan of the belt buckle. Mm-hmm. Big.
Well, we want to brand the corridor,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's on the garbage cans, it's on the...
Right, but you have that big white tower there. I mean, you know, the white...
Here, this right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what is that, right? I mean, that's exactly what I was just describing. That's a large... Now, is it where something lives here, you know, and it quietly erodes down? What I'm concerned about is that it's not a piece of art that's that big. Right. I mean, that could be a very expensive solution and would detract from some other things.
Yeah.
So we got to figure out what's the
that's
right.
It's going to be different to different people. I like it. I think it's very subtle. I think it's handsome. I think it's a nice way to talk.
What we're suggesting there. Yeah. So how do we take that and work with an artist to say, all right, here's the material palette you have to work with.
I like what you've done.
Yeah.
Yourself,
so. Okay. So let's, but Fred, I want to be, I hear you.
I agree with Bill. I mean, I like that. It sort of sparks. What else could that be, or you know, is that kind of design something that can be modified a little bit to give more of a Southwestern or Fourth Avenue flavor?
Mm-hmm. Or maybe it introduces just some sparse color in there or something.
Somebody said spark, and I kind of went sparkle. I mean, there could be some iridescence or something that gets sprinkled through it in a very quiet way. I mean, there's a lot of things we could do. If we wait for all that to solve, we'll never get the building built. So we got to figure that out. Let's identify the zones and go A, B, C, and rank them and make sure that we're doing something great.
Yeah, very good, Fred. I don't know how much that's been designed or if that's just a pattern you guys picked up. I think Tucson actually has this great tradition of art being integrated into the architecture. If you look at Nick Sekeller's buildings, he hired Jim Savage to do these kind of carvings in concrete there on his buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you look at the Valley National Bank at Speedway, or it's Chase now at Speedway and Country Club, it's this great art panel that are actually part of the architecture. They're really fantastic. Back to what Robin told you, I would agree, and I would also extend that comment into the parking garage lighting. I'm working on a parking garage downtown, and the feedback we constantly get is people don't like to see the glare when they look up at the bottom side of the parking garage. Mm-hmm. I know you're only two stories, but it looked like the second story potentially can see into the ceiling cavity of the parking garage, which is something to keep in mind.
Yeah, we've been working on some logistics there too, from a safety standpoint, and you know, what back to your comment, John, about this gel, you know, this jewel wall that we want to create, and it almost becomes a ladder. So we have to, what we're probably going to do is to make it more solid and have it erode as it goes up, but it might have to go further, to your point, so that you can close that top so somebody can't just migrate their way into the building. So we're still working on some of those security details.
Positioning and lighting or shutter fixture. There's a lot of ways.
No more glass at the base and more open apertures up above.
Yeah, you know, I love this wrap and the purity and abstractness. And I think if we start to add a lot more to it, I don't know, we've got to study it, but I don't want to lose that pure element if we can help it. But how do we do it in the way you just described and making sure that we don't have these looking up at that, right? And then also making it interesting. Are you, so just, if I may, John, is this a non-starter for you?
Nothing's a non-starter. Everything's a conversation.
No, but I don't want to leave here mishearing you. And, you know, if we can take this and continue to evolve the big idea and be respectful of what we just heard from you, that's what I want to do. But if you're going, don't come back and show me that. I want to know that, too.
I don't really mind that. I can see how it will be artful. The way I look at it, it looks like at eye level every 4 feet, if there was a lot of sunlight, I'd go, where's my sunglasses? Because I'm looking at a car through a hole or being shot by light. Mm-hmm. So make sure that there's some variety there, and maybe showing really how pedestrians are going to be up against. The scale is very hard to perceive on this building.
And that's part of it, is it's an abstractness I'm trying to create, we're trying to create.
I understand. But I would like to see better perimeter lighting all the way around.
We will have pedestrian scale light poles.
Stevens is black. Right. There are no street poles on there, and those four little restored globes are.
We're going to need supplemental building mounted lighting. There's no room for a pedestrian pole, but along here, and they're not reflected in the design, but there'll be pedestrian scale poles for the back to the bike, the public bike parking, that whole zone. And back to your point, at 2 a.m. when this gets crazy town over here at O'Malley's, we want to make sure this is a safe environment.
Actually, I like that wall. The light through it reminds me of an Earth ship. Michael Reynolds was doing stuff with bottles, but it brings light in different ways.
What we've talked about is actually, and this might end up coming closer to here because of that security piece, but it'll erode as it goes up or something, but how do we get that pedestrian that's at 6 feet to not feel like you're walking against a solid wall? That's what we have to solve for.
Yeah, I actually like it more at this height. I think it's too much taller.
I know, me too.
So that gap really helps it stand out. I also think the small holes help with the issue of scale that you're talking about. I think it actually does a lot of things for the project we're going to support, in my opinion.
We may actually end up infilling this with a mesh or something so that we can create a safe environment.
That might help.
Yeah, but then back to the point about the lights, I got to solve for that. If we can do non-directional lighting. And maybe what's happening is it's actually here and it's pointing that way, sure. You know, as opposed to being in the middle of the space.
So just a couple of comments on kind of historic preservation. That's why I'm here. I think the way that the building steps down, I think the treatment on 4th is good. The kind of recreation of that wall, I'm not sure if I was in the plan review meeting when you presented.
I don't believe you were. I think it's the first time we've met.
Go back two slides. That's a good view of it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So, you know, to me, I think, again, my opinion, I think you could be more abstract with that. I think you picking up the rhythm and the spacing, I think you can do that and probably provide some more transparency to address some of Baton's comments about visibility and safety. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to be quite so literal about it. There's always that balance between being too literal and you don't want it to look like it's a historic resource.
I think the problem on that was that it was intended that the wall would be restored inside and that it was salvageable, and it wasn't until a couple weeks before the pad went forward and was heard publicly that they had to modify the language and say, we got to take this wall down, so is the word replicate okay? But the conversation didn't evolve from there, because that view has been the view from downtown since 1916, and we kind of wanted to keep it. But since it's obviously going, it's being moved back. Now you've got some landscaping there now, which was originally prohibited, but I'd love to see metal awnings with lighting in it all the way around and do a shade study everywhere so that there's better pedestrian experience all the way along there with some modifications.
Sure. We struggled with this. We struggled with the PAD language, and we got great feedback from your colleagues. This is prior to us having that meeting.
I don't want to contradict what they did.
Not at all. No, you haven't been, actually. And if back to the idea of this eyeballs on the street, I love the idea of adding a little bit more architecture and interest here. I'm a little concerned about the tightness and some truck come by and clipping off our awnings, but how do we take that? And we'll come back to you.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah. Think about it.
Let's regroup on that and figure it out, because I think we know more than we did when we put this together.
One last quickie about landscape.
Real quickie.
I looked through your plant list, which is different than your emitter list. You obviously have a Phoenix architect or landscape designer.
Chris Winters.
Half your plants will be fine in Phoenix. They will die here.
Okay.
They have to be hardy to 15 degrees, or they go. Like orchid trees, you better have a lot of lights and people to put up covers, or they're going to be toast on your porch. So you might want to take a look at that sort of stuff. It would be nice to see a shade study that's usual with a plan on this sort of thing.
Sure.
But like San Pedro freeze out at 28, so little things like that.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah.
And to add into that, you mentioned some garden space in this triangle.
On this west side, yeah, sure,
yes.
Right here. And that's going to have some shade structure over it or something, because those plants will not survive.
They'll fry.
Are they all kinds of plants, or fruit plants? What do you?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's good. And just so you know,
to be determined. To be candid, we don't know, but I mean, it's really a community garden structure, and we're going to do raised beds and see what happens. I mean, it will be influenced by the people that live there that are passionate about growing things.
It'd be nice if you could have some of those beds actually be mobile, so they can be moved, because you're not always going to be, you know, in the sight line of sun.
Oh, sure. Interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. One of the things we have to be careful of is our occupancy of that space, and so we were creating these fixed beds to reduce the amount of occupancy. We have to see what happens if we make them mobile.
Yeah.
And finally, on drainage, I would encourage you to up it to Mr. Winkleman's suggestion of 5,000 gallons, because I know your 100-year flood plan just, like, stops.
Did somebody suggest 5,000 gallons? I didn't hear that.
The engineer in the A23 comments. So you might want to check it. In 2008, we had 4.5 inches that happened in an hour and a half. It mm-hmm. happens every 28 years with outbursts, and you've got a 3-foot sloping grade, and then it all empties into your parking entrance that immediately goes into an underground level. So I put in sump pumps and stuff like that, because you could have a huge wall of water going through, coming out the other side, and taking out the trolley station. So I talked to the engineer a little bit more.
Okay,
about that.
I'll have Jason look at that a little more closely. Thank you. Okay.
Great. Thank you, Dean. We'll see you in 6 days.
My fingers will be bleeding, but I will be here. So Corinne, we were talking about the 5th, which is a Tuesday, 3 weeks from today.
So we had held the date of October 30th, but actually we'd like to move it to November 5th or 6th. So 5th is better for you? Okay, so we might need to do a poll, but yeah, quick reactions or input.
Is that the first Tuesday of the month?
Yes, 5th is the first Tuesday. It's election day. The 6th is a mayor council meeting, so there's some things we need to juggle, but either one is potentially an option for PDSD.
However, we have another Ivy project that's been wanting to be here today,
right. So,
actually.
Yeah.
127 South
Frank. Yeah,
the
6th
is a Wednesday, right?
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would have needed to know, the 5th as well. But yeah. I'll have to look at this.
Okay, so we'll send a doodle poll on that, but
probably can.
You probably could do the 5th or 6th? Okay.
Yeah, either time.
Great.
Like anywhere from like 11 to 5. But
okay.
Yeah, 6 is better recommended.
And we're wide open on our part. To your convenience, we'll be here.
Okay. All right. And then secondly, as Maria said, there's another item that was scheduled for the 30th. They've asked for that. They wanted it actually earlier. So, of course, we have the 30th on your calendar, so that's, of course, the option. But if there was a way to do it next week, they would appreciate that. Perhaps the 24th. So,
which one is that? 127?
127 South 5th Avenue. So it's in the downtown area, not 4th Avenue. But it would include Kathleen. So we'll send that out.
Possibly.
Calendar
phone
okay.
Follow up.
So we're going to get to work. Thank you all for today. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. So next on agenda is a call to the audience. Individuals may speak up 3 minutes. We as a board, nor can the presenters engage them. It's just to listen to any comments that are there, and we do not respond to any of those. So are they to call the audience anyone who wishes to speak? Let's talk future agenda items. Are we noting?
Yeah, I think we kind of preempted that. Did that a little out of order. So those future agenda items are 127 South 5th. We could hear that next week, or of course the 30th. And then this item.
And potentially 375 South Stone. They're going to PRS on the 24th, so if we're going to do that after the 24th, you could potentially see that item as well.
That's true. So the November.
So if we stick with the 30th.
That's another complicated project.
Yeah.
Sure. Has any ideas on when Baffert may be kept moving forward?
That won't be for several months, I would guess, because we have not received a formal submittal yet.
Okay. Any other information?
don't believe so.
Then, any other comments?
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
And 5:28.